The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Flory, Judge Jessen, and Judge Smith, the Honorable James Flory presiding.
All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this morning. It's January 3rd, 2021, and our next and last case for oral argument is Alaris Financial versus Aaron Carlson Corporation, court file 820-1135. Even though we're appearing via Zoom here today, our rules are the same. So you'll each have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are recording the proceedings, so please identify yourselves for our record at the beginning of your argument. And as was just indicated, it would be helpful if you mute yourself when you're not talking. So with that, we'll begin. Counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brandon Schwartz. May it please the court and counsel, I represent Aaron Carlson Corporation and Jason Horner. Being that this is your last hearing for the morning, I'll try and be as expeditious with time as possible, particularly given that this is a very narrow issue here. Just as a procedural matter, during the pendency of this appeal, Mr. Horner filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, which resulted in an order of discharge pursuant to 11 U.S.C. Section 727, including the debt owed, allegedly owed to Alaris. So I'm not going to address any issues related to Mr. Horner. I only note that just that it was granted and given the allegations of some nefarious conduct by Alaris. This appeal involves Aaron Carlson Corporation is resolved entirely by statutory interpretation. And this court reviews whether service of process was effective de novo, as it's a question of law. The parties really don't have much dispute on the facts here. It's undisputed that Aaron Carlson Corporation.
Counsel, if I may, just get to a question, because I think we all know the facts of it, although you're welcome to go back to it. I want to understand your argument. I believe comes down to whether an affidavit needed to be filed before service on the Secretary of State. Is that right?
100%, Your Honor.
It filed with whom?
The court.
So your argument is prior to a complaint being served and filed, an affidavit needed to be filed. I'm just not want to understand mechanically what you're suggesting, that an action needed to be, a matter needed to be opened in district court, and then an affidavit filed in that matter prior to serving the complaint. Is that right?
Two parts to that, Judge. So as we're all aware, we have a somewhat unique ability in Minnesota to do pocket service where we can serve without filing. If that's the case, I think the affidavit of non-service needs to be served or mailed to the defendant. If the case
Well, that's a different question than where it needs to be filed. I think your argument is it needed to be filed somewhere. I guess my question is, could it be filed in district court before an action is commenced through service? That's my question.
No, the summons and complaint would be filed with the court, with the district court, and the jurisdiction that the district that the action would be pending in, and with either after that, or concurrent with it, you would file your affidavit of non-service, and then in this case, serve the Secretary of State. I think to alleviate that and just jump to service of the Secretary of State renders the statute superfluous, which we don't do in statutory interpretation.
So, Mr. Schwartz, if I may follow up on Judge Smith's questions, when I look at this, I say, well, why is it, you know, service, it's covered by Minnesota Statute 5.25, but when we look at filing, that is addressed under the Rules of Civil Procedure Rule 5.04B, and which says that all documents that that are required, including the certificate of service, shall be filed with the court within a reasonable time after service. It talks about, isn't that where we should be looking to talk about when someone should be filed as opposed to the statute, which is focused on service?
I think that's an excellent question, Judge. And if you look at reasonable time, you look at what occurred here. The affidavit of non-service was not filed until 7 months after this purported service or alleged purported service on Erin Carlson, not until 6 months after the case was filed, and not until 6 months after Erin Carlson and its answer asserted ineffective service of process.
And Mr. Schwartz, did you make that argument under Rule 5.04 as part of your opposition to summary judgment?
Yes, Judge. And I think I wanted to address that because Alaris argues as part of its opposition that we didn't. When you look at the Judge Regis's order, addendum page 8, the very first full paragraph states, defendant ACC asserts that service upon it was not proper because Stacey A. Stelzer's affidavit of no service was not filed with the court until May 18, 2020.
I understand you're arguing the timeliness of this, but when I looked at what you argued, but you know the record better than I do, you were arguing about ineffective service under the statute. You weren't talking about whether it was filed within a reasonable time after service under the rule. I'm asking if you addressed Rule 5.04 as part of the proceedings below, because I didn't see that rule referenced in your brief either.
My apologies, Judge. No, that rule was not referenced in our brief. It was not raised by Alaris Financial. It was not raised by the district court. That rule, as far as reasonable timeliness of filing of an affidavit of non-service or the service, was not brought up by the district court. I was referring to that we argued at the district court that this is really a if-then proposition. If you do the non-service of affidavit or the filing by the county of the sheriff trying to go out and serve somebody, then you can move on to service through the Secretary of State. But the timeliness under Rule 5 of filing after, no, that was not addressed before the district court.
As an appellate court, looking at your statutory interpretation argument, shouldn't we also be looking at the rules on filing? That's my question to you.
I think that's, yes. I think that's we should do that. I mean, rule, when you look at Rule 1 particularly, we're trying to resolve cases expeditiously, speedy, and with the least amount of expense. So I think that you can read those in conjunction, but to be candid with the court, no, it was not raised before the district court.
Here's the problem, I think, counsel, with your argument, is I don't see, and tell me if I'm wrong, right? We have a statute that talks about service of process. We have rules that talk about filing with the court. You know, the court issues its rules about filing. The statute talks about service of process on a foreign corporation. I don't see anywhere in there that talks about or directs parties to file something with a court. Is there anything in there? That's just something you're inferring from, is that right? You're inferring that.
I would respectfully disagree with the word inferring, but my reading of the statute is when you say that whenever a registered agent cannot be found at its registered office in the state is shown by the return of the sheriff of the county, or by an affidavit of attempted service, if we don't have to file it or we don't have to serve it on the other party, what's the point of requiring that before you go to the Secretary of State for this?
Well, serving it on another party doesn't make sense because you've already just established by those two things you can't reach the other party. So let's leave that aside. But filing it with the court, I thought was your fundamental argument, that the person needs to initiate a matter, file an affidavit with the court, then can serve the summons. And I just don't see, unless I'm missing it, the word file or court appear in this statute. Am I missing it, or is it just not there?
The word, you're right that the word file is not in statute 5.25 subdivision 4. You are correct that my fundamental argument is that you have to file it with the court before you move to this. It's really an alternative service method. It's just like with personal service, if you can't personally serve the individual, you can move to publication, for instance, but you still have to jump through the hoops to get there. And there is not any case law from this court or from the Minnesota Supreme Court interpreting this statute, but we do know that statutes are interpreted to give meaning to their provisions. and we don't interpret statutes to render provisions superfluous. So I think if you don't have to file it, what would be the point of including of the legislature including that language in there that you have?
Oh, I think that later, if there's a defense that we were never served, as happens here, then the party puts in the affidavit that they satisfied the statute. I think involving the court when there's an actual issue of service, I think is not inconsistent with either the statute or the rules or a filing after service. It proves up the compliance with the service for to the court's satisfaction, I think is the way to a way to look at it.
Well, then I would go, Judge Smith, I would go back to Judge Jensen's question of we look at reasonable timeliness of it. And it wasn't, I mean, memories fade. This was 7 months after this allegedly occurred, and it was only filed after we raised the defense of it.
But is that odd? I mean, it goes to the issue that's raised, I think is the point. I mean, the court wants to be involved in issues that are raised. Would not a party respond then?
Respond to which piece, Judge?
To prove up the effectiveness of their service by filing what they need to do in order to prove it up. And to respond to a defense that's raised.
It doesn't make any, I don't believe that it makes any sense to read the statute that you don't have to file the affidavit of attempted service until somebody raises the issue, because it the statute reads very much as a if this, then that. If you can't serve them, and if you have an affidavit of attempted service that you file, then you can move to the Secretary of State. It just doesn't make it any sense if you don't have to follow those obligations.
I have two questions for you, Mr. Schwartz. The first is, looking at your reply brief, you distinguish more between completing the affidavit of service and filing it. But it was not clear to me whether you have a separate argument about, well, at least it should have been completed before the service through the Secretary of State's office, even if it wasn't filed. So that's my first question. And my second question, I'll just get them both on the table, is you argue about the need for strict compliance with this statute. But when I look at the cases, but maybe you've seen some, I haven't, when they talk about strict compliance, that's more in terms of service by publication, not service through the Secretary of State's office. So if you could address those two issues, that would help me.
Let me start with the second question, because the case law dealing with strict compliance is all related to publication. There is not a case one way or the other saying that Aaron Carlson's position on this is correct or Alaris's position on this is correct. This court just has not had the opportunity yet to render an opinion giving guidance as to the statutory language at issue here. As to the first question, I think it's both, Judge. I think that it not only should have been completed when done, it should have been filed when completed, and it wasn't. It was done 7 months later. So I believe that this court should render an opinion interpreting 5.25 subdivision 4 to require the filing of the affidavit of non-service before we permit this alternative service through the Secretary of State. The only other piece that I would like to address briefly is this court recently decided a case, MCHS Red Wing versus Converse. It's A20-1001, in which the court held that if a plaintiff ineffectively serves a defendant and the defendant thereafter effectively serves an answer that does not raise an affirmative defense of insufficient service of process, the civil case has been effectively commenced. I believe it's inapplicable here because we did raise the affirmative defense of insufficient service of process, but I wanted to address that just because this court just only a matter of weeks ago decided that issue. And with that, unless there was any—
Actually, I have a question, Mr. Schwartz. On this if-then argument that you're making, there's affidavits in the file from Alaris saying we attempted service and it was unsuccessful. You haven't challenged those by affidavit. It doesn't seem like you dispute that there was attempted service that was unsuccessful. So if that's the case, it doesn't seem to make sense to me that something more would be required until there was a challenge to service. Or am I misinterpreting the record here? Do you dispute did you submit anything to the district court that disputed the fact that attempted service was unsuccessful?
Your Honor, I could not. Under the general rules of practice, 115.03, we have the original filing of the summary judgment motion, which has to be supported by affidavits. We had our opposition, which was supported by affidavits, saying that there was no affidavit of non-service in the record. And then after our opposition was filed, Alaris filed the affidavit of non-service under the rules. And I was fortunate enough to be appointed by the Minnesota Supreme Court to serve on the General Rules Committee. We don't get an opportunity after that to file any additional affidavits. So you're correct in the reading of the record, but under the rules, we didn't have an opportunity to file any additional affidavits. So with that, I note that my time is up and I will reserve my 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. Mr. Orenstein? You're muted, sir.
Okay, how's that?
Sounds good.
Okay, good. Thank you. May it please the court and opposing counsel, I think it is blindingly obvious to all of us that the statute, section 5.25, subdivision 4, A2, nowhere refers to filing the affidavit of attempted service or the affidavit of non-service. I think that the court's comment or question to Mr. Schwartz, aren't you inferring that requirement from the language of the statute, is an understatement or is a diplomatic way to put it. I also would disagree with the word inferring. I would say importing into the statute a requirement that plainly is not there, or maybe imagining into the statute would be a better word. Mr. Schwartz's comment is, well, it only makes sense, doesn't it, that we should have to file, that a party should have to file this affidavit of attempted service once it's been sworn out before the affidavit of substitute service is filed. Not only does that not make sense, I mean, as the panel has pointed out, why would we raise this issue, file an affidavit and raise this issue before service has been challenged by the opposing party? And doesn't that convert what we now have in the state of Minnesota, which is a state in which an action may be commenced simply by service and process, to a state in which, in this very narrow set of circumstances where a foreign corporation is served by substitute service, we have to commence the action by actually filing something, by filing the affidavit? That would be a tremendous change in the law. That makes no sense whatsoever. The reading that Mr. Schwartz's client is advocating would create chaos, confusion, uncertainty. Imagine if I am now filing my affidavit of attempted service and my affidavit of substitute service, and I have, as the statute requires, I have my affidavit that shows that we attempted service at the registered office. Nobody was there. The door was locked. That's on October 16th. And after that, 5 days later, I have my affidavit of substitute service that says that Metro Legal delivered to and left with the Secretary of State a copy of the summons and complaint. I have all that in order, but I haven't told my secretary that first you have to file the affidavit of attempted service, and then you have to file the affidavit of substitute service. So she files them in reverse order. Where are we under Aaron Carlson Corporation's interpretation of the statute? I guess service is invalid. Or what if just through pure happenstance, Metro Legal, when they fill out the two affidavits, they complete the affidavit of attempted service, they sign it after they've already dictated and signed the much simpler affidavit of substitute service. And now I file those, and Let's say I file them in the quote right order, and I file the affidavit of attempted service, and then I file the affidavit of substitute service. No. Too bad. Too bad. Service is invalid because the affidavit of attempted service, according to Mr. Schwartz's client, is completed after the affidavit of substitute service. That is just not the, that's not what the statute says. That doesn't make any sense. It's an impractical, unworkable, absurd interpretation. Go ahead.
Bringing what you're talking about back to what the statute says, I'm looking at subdivision 4 and under, I guess, 2, where it talks about whenever a registered agent cannot be found at the registered office in this state, right? As shown by either the return, the sheriff, or affidavit of attempted service. So to me, the argument really comes down to as shown. So when does that showing have to be made? And this is where, to the extent I'm troubled, is like that the affidavit here wasn't even complete. Affidavit of attempted service wasn't even completed until months later.
Correct.
As opposed to, it was completed at least before the filing was made with the, or the service was made on the Secretary of State's office, even if it wasn't, filed at the court till later. So could you address that?
Sure.
For me, in the context of when does this showing have to be made?
Sure. The question of when the showing has to be made is not addressed. And that's really the point, is not addressed by the statute. The statute says that the Secretary of State may be served with process whenever a registered agent cannot be found at the registered office as shown by an affidavit of attempted service. So the question is, did Alaris show by an affidavit of attempted service that they attempted, that their process server attempted to serve Aaron Carlson Corporation at its registered office and was not able to do so? The answer to the question, docket number 74, affidavit of non-service, is clearly yes. That's as far as the analysis go. We have now complied with the statute. There is nothing in the statute that establishes any sort of timing requirement that must be shown, one day after substitute service, or that the affidavit must be created, signed before the affidavit of substitute service. It doesn't say that. There's no reason for it to say that. All that is required, logically, obviously, is that before the affidavit, before service is effectuated on the Secretary of State as statutorily designated agent for service of process on a foreign corporation, all that's required is that the attempt first be made. Well, the attempt was made. And then all the statute requires is that there be an affidavit that show that. There is an affidavit that shows that. It's part of the record. End of analysis. If I can just for a moment touch on Mr. Horner's appeal, I am assuming, but I'm reluctant to assume that since I have 7 minutes and 53 seconds left, that the court and opposing counsel are of the view that that appeal is now moot, and that as the court determined in its order lifting the stay on, dissolving the stay and reinstating the appeal on April 15th, 2021, that the sole appellant is now Aaron Carlson Corporation. But just to do the mootness analysis, obviously, once the discharge order is entered in Mr. Horner's bankruptcy case, his personal liability for the judgment against him is extinguished. And the definition of mootness in Minnesota under the case that's commonly cited is City of Richfield versus Walzer Auto Sales, Inc., 641 Northwestern 2nd, 885, 2002, Minnesota Supreme Court case.
Mr. Horner, Mr. Ornstein, if I may, just as I do not have it right here in front of me, but as I recall our April 15th, 2021 order, it removed Mr. Horner as an appellant from these proceedings. Is that not your recollection as well?
The order is just a little tiny bit equivocal, because it says, it appears that Aaron Carlson Corporation remains the sole appellant. I guess I'll read appears. So what's flagging all this is the qualification, it appears. It's the only reason I'm going through this analysis. So I guess if the court is satisfied that this is not a mere appearance, but that Mr. Horner is no longer a party to the appeal because his appeal has been rendered moot by virtue of the entry of a discharge order in his bankruptcy case, which also seems obvious, then I'll move on. Actually, I'll wrap up the argument because I don't have anything more to say. I would request, Alaris would request that the court affirm the judgment against Aaron Carlson Corporation and determine that the appeal and dismiss the appeal of Mr. Horner as moot.
All right. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Mr. Ornstein. Mr. Schwartz, you do have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish.
Thank you, Judge. On the mootness issue, I agree. I think it's moot, which is why I didn't address it. With the discharge, I don't think there's any reason to address it, so I'm not going to go any further on that. I just want to address this piece about this argument of that the position here on the statute would create chaos, for instance, in the pocket service context. I don't think it would, and here's why. Well, yes, we have the ability to do pocket service in Minnesota. If any party wants to actually get relief from the court, you have to file the action. You file the summons and complaint. You file your affidavit of non-service. Then you file your affidavit of service to the Secretary of State. That's not a complicated process. I think to read the statute or to rule that the statute somehow alleviates the need that we have to first attempt it, file it, and then get it done would render it superfluous, like I argued earlier. I don't want to belabor the point. It's not a complicated issue. You're all very smart judges and get the issue. We would respectfully request that the summary judgment be reversed and remanded, and that while this is a somewhat unique issue, I think that the ruling from this court will give guidance to parties on how to comply with this alternative method. So I appreciate the time and attention to this case. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. And thank you to both counsel for your briefing and argument in the matter. We will now take the matter under advisement and we'll issue a decision within the statutory timeframe. We stand adjourned on this matter.